afternoon, you beautiful sickos. Dieter and Hutch back in the saddle after a mini bye. That's frankly just the exact wrong amount of time, Jake.
Yeah.
Perfectly incorrect. Just enough to let your guard down, and then you have to ramp right back up into it. Just two words for the mini bye. Fuck that.
It's like when you get like a little time off from school, you get like 3-day weekend.
Totally.
And you're like, oh, great. And then you're like, nah. And then you're screwed for like 2 weeks.
I just yesterday, it's back to the normal grind, right? Like, normal stuff. And it's not like I didn't work on Friday. It's not like, but I usually get one day off. I usually get Saturday and I watch college football and my children sometimes simultaneously. And I try on Saturday, right? Like that's the day off, but you're never really out of it.
Right.
Getting 2 days off and like having to like watch an entire NFL slate on a Sunday.
Yeah.
I'm just like, oh, I don't do this as a profession anymore.
Oh, that's so funny. Cause I didn't see almost any, I saw a little bit of NFL football. I was mostly watching a John Prine cover band at Hardly Strictly, which
okay.
God bless the city of San Francisco for throwing a free bluegrass. And what was it? Hellman, I guess is the guy that put it in down
the mayonnaise just, man.
Yeah. I was wondering, I asked that question. Did he do both? Did he both have an interest in parks and mayonnaise? Were those his two things? These are the important questions.
I might have an interest in both, just as a heads up. Okay. By the way, before we get on with any of this, this is a way too personal Dieter thing. But it is an appropriate, audience appreciation shout out. Shout out to the pharmacist at Costco yesterday where I'm trying to get my fat boy medicine, which the insurance says I'm not fat enough for anymore.
Aww.
And we're going through a whole thing and he's like, yeah, love the show. Do you know the level of weird? Nothing, total professional, nothing but respect. Like I couldn't even fathom, which is the right question. Like, hey, what's your name? Thanks for watching. Like I just said, oh man, appreciate that. Thank you. What? I'm just trying to get some tricepatide here, and we're dealing with some nonsense on that front, which is fine. I don't need it, but it's cool that the show has enough of an audience in enough places that I bump into somebody about once a week who says, I love watching the show. And we love that you like watching the show, because there are times when we don't love doing the show and we're sticking into it. We're sticking through it. And the pharmacist is a sicko, but luckily he's got the prescriptions. It was hilarious.
That's
it was
awesome.
Walking away, I'm like, what the fuck just happened? But Sicko Nation expanding into the professional class.
I will say very briefly before we get back to business, it is funny because I was talking to my girlfriend about like writing, and she's like, don't you think about like putting it out there? And I'm like, not really at all. Cause we've
sort
of
putting it out there.
Like the thought of, oh, someone's going to read this, like a sort of concern about, oh, it's going out to an audience.
You're in the public sphere to a degree.
To me, when we write, like it doesn't even register. It's just like, oh, I just have to write. We've just been doing it so long. And then occasionally someone goes, oh, I read that. And you're like, oh, people are reading this?
Oh, no.
Right?
Which, of course, you know that that's the case.
Right.
But it's an ethereal thing.
Right.
I do think, people would say every now and again, they could never put the face to the name, even though everything I write has a face right next to my name.
That's right.
It would be, sorry, comments. Once we started doing this, I did KMBR. I still do KMBR for six years. I was on every night for 3 hours. People would hear my voice and try to put it together, but they never get there and I'd be gone. Just slither out before they could figure it out. Now it's crazy. And I love it. It's really fun. So now the two most awkward situations are pharmacist and fat boy medicine, which was super fun. Just like, you can see that I'm, why I need this. Luckily it wasn't like some sort of like infection or something terrible.
That's great.
Tampa Bay Bucks staff infection. We'll get to it. And then the other one was somebody at Spiesenkommer in Alameda saying, love the show, while my wife was breastfeeding, which was just a blast.
Love that for you.
And by the way, have you seen my wife's boob?
Moving on to the San Francisco 49ers.
Talking about boobs. Okay, Jake, 49ers Rams feels like ancient history.
Yeah.
and you're still grinding. You're sending me texts all day yesterday being like, let me break this thing down. What did you come away with from 49ers Rams? Let's close the door on it, baby.
Yeah, I mean, the Rams, so I think there's some obvious things, but like the non-obvious things are like, I think I overestimated the Rams secondary and their linebacking core.
I'm with you on that linebacking core for sure. I didn't think it would be that glaring. I've been telling you, everybody, that secondary is suspect.
And the scheme was part of it. They just left a lot. You would think in a Mac Jones game, like, hey, maybe let's not leave every check down wide open. And not just like wide open, because like naturally you leave check downs open with like late releasing guys.
Yeah.
But like you're set up where someone can close on it. Like Fred Warner and D Winters are always like, all right, well, someone's coming open and we're going to, you know, get downhill and attack it. And the Rams did a really poor job of that. They also left just acres of space for like sit routes and and hole shots and other stuff. And I was just not impressed with the way they ran their defense. Now their front is still sick and gave the 49ers fits. Some really rough reps from the 49ers O-line. Colton McKivitz, I think by far his worst pass protecting game. And I think people will take this and say like, oh, see, Colton McKivitz is terrible.
Jared Verse sick.
He was mostly on Byron Young, I will say.
Well, is Byron Young sick?
Both of them are very good.
That first half was bizarre because we both think very highly of Chris Shula and how he schemes it up, understanding the limitations that they have in the secondary. And it really did feel like, you see this a lot in college football, it really felt like the Rams went into that game kind of like Penn State went into UCLA, and it's just like, we're good. We'll be fine. And they didn't run anything interesting or cool. And then at halftime, they're like, oh, shit, this isn't working.
Yeah, instead of, you know, they're like, we're not going to overthink this, right? We're going to play it straight. We've got the dudes. They're hurt. If we don't beat ourselves up, we'll beat them, right? If we just play our game, we'll get to it. But then you get sort of punched in the mouth on the first two series from the Niners, and you're like, oh, shit, now we have to. I mean, they love to throw the ball, but now you're throwing it every time. You can't really – they didn't really ever have a balance with their offense. It was all – I mean, I think they ran the ball like feels like 10 times, right?
Like the Rams or the Niners?
The Rams. Like the Rams just had no balance with their run game. Like, and I know they're going
to
sling it.
They were getting something, to be fair. I mean
– No, I'm not saying they couldn't run the ball. I'm saying that
– they ran it 16 times. Corum had one carry for 13 yards, Williams 14 for 65, 4.6 average.
Right. It was like, but it was like a quarter of the snaps were runs to like 75%.
Yeah. Stafford attempted like, 47 passes.
Correct. Which is just like, I don't care how much you love your pass game, it's not a great balance to strike.
You should like that pass game, though. That pass game is pretty
it's
sick.
It's a very sick pass game. I will say one thing. I think Jason Pinnock is probably doing a little bit more work in the secondary than I think we gave him credit for. I think rightly harsh on him, but he's communicating a lot. Renardo Green's missing some things. I think in general, and it's not just Renardo Green, like Lenore messed one up. Sam O was supposed to peel into coverage and completely blew it on one that Kyren dropped the ball, which they got bailed out a couple times, more than a couple times by Kyren Williams.
Corum with another one. Yeah.
Yeah, I still think the secondary is very suspect just in terms of getting the call right. Like they are doing much more complicated stuff than they did last year, and I think it's taking Green and even Lenore and sometimes Siegel times to get it right, where it's just a lot that has to be communicated. And as much as I love Malik Mustafa, I think it'll be interesting when he comes back what they do, because there's a lot that has to be communicated back there. And I just wonder where he's going to be at with the defense, you know, coming back straight away.
You're going to have, when Mustafa comes back, and we're presuming it's not for this week. I would guess that it would be the Falcons, but I also guess that, you know, George Kittle would be back this week, and here we are. He'll be back.
Well, I think Rappaport made it sound like he'd be back, and then they were like, no, it's not happening.
I mean, it's not like that's not something that we were staying on top of. We were just kind of operating on general presumptions there. Like if you give him because 4 weeks when they put him on IR, it was somewhat of a like, wow, that's the conservative timeline there. And it turns out it wasn't conservative enough. So regardless, when Mustafa comes back, you're going to have a second year safety. Theoretically, I do want to get into this, a first year safety if they keep Siegel in there. Yep. And I'm not sure that's a guarantee right now.
Yeah, I'm not sure it is either.
We'll talk about it in a second. A second but year I also corner.
Think
it,
yeah. I also think if they bench him, he's coming back later in the year.
Yeah, no, I got some thoughts. Renardo Green, who's clearly having a lot thrown on him, right? He's being asked to do the most.
And like you said earlier, more than Lenore, and I completely
way
agree
more
there.
Than Lenore. Lenore at a new position, let's be clear, and then either Chase Lucas or Upton Stout. So that is four first or second year players and a guy at a new position. Like, yeah, you're going to have some issues when you're also doing the most you've ever done since Robert Saleh joined the 49ers for the first time on the back end. It's not surprising at all to me that they're having some communications issues. I guess my question, Jake, is why is this stuff showing up now when it didn't seem to be all that apparent in the first or second week of the season?
I think maybe it was there, but it's also like early in the season. So like I think when stuff lingers, you notice it more and it becomes more of a problem. That's not to say that like it wasn't there, but early in the year, every defense is sort of sloppy, I think. Hmm. I mean, defenses, I think, win more than offenses just because offenses are more sloppy, but yeah. Defenses like coverage wise are going to miss some things. And I just think there's the little bit of like Pooney, like started off hot last year, and then a few games in, there's a read on the rookie, right? And offenses adjust, and they go, we are going to attack this person and put them in conflict and make this rookie make the right mental decision. So I think that's part of it.
I mean, we got to be blunt about this. I know that the Niners think very highly of Siegel with how much they've thrown on him. Right, that's the biggest tell. Yeah. If a coach likes you, they're going to give you responsibility. They're doing that with Mykel Williams. They're doing that with Renardo Green. They're doing that with Marquise Siegel. Technically, they have to do it with Stout because that's a position that requires a lot of responsibility inherently. I'm not sure how much they like him. They did bench him in the last game.
Right.
But when Siegel, you and I are both very bullish, and let's just get into this now. Like, Pinnick is doing enough. There are still big errors. That touchdown run that he allowed to ETN, and he allowed it, was egregious. I would, thinking short-term and long-term, put Pinnick on the bench, bring in Malik Mustafa.
I would too.
But where my head is at now is that Siegel seems to be so susceptible in pass coverage, not because he can't handle the positioning, but because he has no ball skills or they haven't manifested yet.
Yeah.
Just kind of a beat behind. He can give you one, but not the other. That they're going to do some sort of weird three-man rotation.
Or four-man safety.
Oh,
thing.
Boy.
That's... With yeah.
Yeah.
With the top five safety in the league, Jair Brown.
Well, I mean, again, on the team. If they add another one, he is undeniable top five. I think that things can get weird back there, and I don't know if that helps the 49ers when we're dealing with a secondary where communication has proven to be somewhat problematic as of late.
Yeah, I'm almost tempted to I don't know. It depends on, like, Mustafa's ready to go. I let him go. But if there's any sort of iffiness about it, I just give him another week.
Yeah.
That's fair, sure. Dante. Yeah, there are more positional battles now than there were in camp.
Some of them are not ideal positional battles. I mean, that's kind of the nature of football, right? There's a bunch of backups. There's not a clear-cut backup number two in a lot of spots. And then you get injuries, and now you're in the belly of the beast, and then you get the wide receiver conundrum. You get now the safety conundrum. It's not like Daryl Luter's trying to take anybody's spot, though.
True. So. Let me say one thing on the positive note, still on the defense, but switching gears to the front. For a front that has everyone's injured and dying and in peril and has no Nick Bosa, I was really, really fucking impressed with what the 49ers did. I think Alfred Collins, and I'm not saying he has wholeheartedly turned the corner and that he's just like an overall good player. He's still like got a lot of
boom
work
or bust,
to do.
Baby. Yeah.
But I do think the one thing he's starting to figure out, getting into somebody's chest, ripping. And like, wow. That's exactly, we watched it the first day he was back. Chris Kocurek was getting pretty frustrated and screaming at him. He's like, "You're an enormous mountain of a man. Mm-hmm. Get your hands in their chest, pull them away, and rip on through." And he wasn't getting it, and it was taking time. He, in this game, figured out that move, I think. And I'm not saying that that's going to work every time, but I think he got a feel for it where I think it's Kevin Dotson, who I texted Dieter. I was like, he's damn good in pass protection. He's probably the most reliable pass protecting offensive lineman for the Rams. I was really impressed with him.
He was the inverse of Alaric Jackson.
Alaric Jackson, by the way, 77, got his ass kicked on almost every snap.
And it really had not been the case leading into that game for what it was.
No, he got worked. He got worked, did. which made me think he wasn't right, but almost every snap he got worked.
Yeah.
And I watched Collins start to figure it out and beat. And it's not like the quickest win ever, right? Like it's getting into somebody's chest.
It's a process.
Right. It's a slow win, but it was like a win. And even CJ West started to figure it out, because CJ West, to be fair, hasn't had like any one-on-ones. Like he hasn't had that many snaps, and the snaps he has had, he's the last guy, which means, all right, you got a double team. Mm-hmm. You basically just wait. And like, if somebody breaks contain, you chase him down. That's kind of the job.
Right.
So I was impressed with him, West as well. And Mykel Williams was, I would argue this was his best game, which I know might sound pretty wild. It was way better than I thought on first watch.
It was consistently smart plays. I mean, and listen, obviously he's just doing what the coaches tell him to do. But he executed it at a very high level. I mean, I watch Mykel with an intent eye on this, knowing that every Monday I'm going to get blasted because box score doesn't say anything. But you think about the game-winning play. Let's just use that as the example, right? And you have Fred Warner in there. You have Chase Lucas in there. And then Siegel comes in and delivers the final thump. And all three of those guys deserve incredible props for what they did on that play. Those were great plays by those three guys. That play is impossible if Mykel Williams doesn't dive in and force two linemen to have to deal with him because he shot the gap that they did not think was going to shoot.
Let Warner go completely clean. And Warner's like fits incredibly well on that play. And it's just phenomenal, but he keeps him clean. And that's the thing of like what we were talking about last year is the 49ers linebackers weren't clean.
Never.
And a guy like Mykel, with the force he provides at the point of attack on pretty much every single run snap.
Yeah.
He lets them clean up and do what they're going to do.
As I said earlier, and this might have been a bit of hyperbole now, just because Bosa was such an instrumental part of this, but he came in, and the way that I phrased it was single-handedly. Clearly, it wasn't that. It was with a pairing, with 97 as well. But single-handedly is what I said. Turn the Niners from one of the worst run defenses in the NFL to one of the best run defenses in the NFL. And obviously, there's 11 guys out there, and they have to make their plays too. But he fundamentally changes what that front can do. The challenge now is that they need more than the fundamentals. They need somebody with some pop, some explosion. And Huff is still playing well, but he's an ancillary piece. He's a secondary scorer.
Right, and he got in the run game a little bit this week.
As you would expect, it's amazing he hadn't been up until that point, because it's not like he got bigger, stronger, or, you know, smarter about how to do that. He knows what his game is. They're not going to ask him to do anything that's not. Anything that he gives you in the run game is gravy, and he's given you a lot. But now you're playing him more snaps. There's more opportunities to get got there.
Yeah.
I guess, Jake, watching the tape back, they won the football game.
They did.
We talked about it with sort of a feverish pace and not full understanding. And I'm still not quite sure I fully understand why Sean McVay got roped into a dick measuring contest with Kyle Shanahan, because going back to just the fundamental final play, right? Going back to that game winning play for the 49ers defense, bootleg, just from the bootleg, he would have scored a touchdown. I mean, how do you not know that they're going to, I mean, listen, I know, also, it's, I know what, you know, what you know, what I know.
Why are you running it to that side?
Yeah. Maybe go away from Warner and Williams. Right, maybe go towards Sam Ekwonu and D. Winters. Just a thought. And Matt Stafford, maybe it's because of Larrick Jackson.
I just can't believe you're gonna like pass the ball every play and like be able to get chunk yardage and easy yards every time Puka touches the ball, and then go away from that.
Run the pop play again, which, by the way, is totally illegal. But like, run that pop play that they ran to Puka that they scored the touchdown on, where Davante Adams just runs straight into his dude. It's a stack on the right.
But really, really just bootleg play action, have somebody in motion coming across, and then you have like a short flat option, and then a tight end releasing in a flat.
Okay, but it turns into a dick measuring contest when those two are together. And there is some inferiority there with McVay that can't quite be explained. Because, again, everything, you know, when you get young coaches together in a room, they just play the what would you do game, where it's like, okay, I'm going to give you this 4-3 front, and we're going to bring this guy. So then the offensive coach goes, okay, well, I would do this. And then the other guy goes, oh, I'd do this. And you could do that for hours, right? That's what young coaches, particularly at the college ranks, do. Like a GA, they'll sit on the grease board all day and do that. Obviously, there's an inherent level of this at every level of coaching, even at the highest levels with two of the best in the game. I think, and we can, you know, you can just say, oh, well, he's short, therefore he has the inferiority complex. Well, that dude's got a bigger brain, and that's what really matters. And I do think that he maybe gives a little bit too much deference to Kyle Shanahan's teams and the physicality, in that he overthinks it, or he presumes something because he thinks the best of
Kyle.
He just never thinks that Kyle's going to make a mistake. And I found it very bizarre kind of to watch, because as much as the Niners did everything they could in their power to win that game, and they did, and the Rams did damn near everything they could do. I mean, not full Cardinals Titans, but everything in their power to lose that game, and they did it. And if I underestimated anything, it was the Thursday night of it all. Not the Kyle Sean dynamic. Okay.
Yeah.
Material. The Thursday night of it all really, really did it, because the best point you've brought up since we've talked about this game was how the Niners, obviously they did an incredible job. Their first two drives, just long, physical, prolonged drives that kept Stafford off the field. And it prevented Stafford from catching into a rhythm on a Thursday, which is way out of his comfort zone.
Right.
This old man, he's like, I've been doing this for Sundays my entire life. You're asking me to do on a Thursday night at 5 p.m.? Like, what are we talking about? Like, I'm doing something else during that time.
Right.
I have an XM radio show that I should be doing right now. But it took him a while to get into it, and that could have proven the difference in the game amongst so many other things. So I want to close the book on that game. I want to move forward here with a new segment. It's called Is This a Thing? So you and I like to talk about things. Like, is that a thing? I think this is a thing. We talk about this all the time. These are these little nuggets, these little kernels that might explode into a big piece of delicious popcorn down the line. Is this a thing? Are we talking about this in a couple of weeks, in a couple of months, in a couple of years? Let's start with this. This is the one we're just going to do, the big one off the jump.
Go for it.
Purposes. Is Mac Jones as good as Brock Purdy? Is that a thing? Is this a thing that's happening?
No. No, it's not. But as I wrote in my column for SF Gate, it's the right choice for right now. I think you keep riding it until Brock is fully healthy. Like I really truly mean, you're getting the same results, if not better, in a simplified offense with, we'll talk about the connection with Kendrick Bourne in a sec, but like, you're getting the results. And if you're going to have both quarterbacks be injured, stick with the one who's the backup, who's like able to play through the injury a little bit better, because he's a little bit bigger and
he doesn't have to move as much.
He doesn't have to move, and he doesn't try to move. Right.
Right.
So I would stay with Mac. He's keeping it simple. It's working for now. And until Purdy's fully healthy, you keep riding Mac. And when Purdy's fully healthy, you bring him back.
Well, and it goes without saying that Purdy's the guy, because Purdy's being paid. Now, Mac can do a lot to prolong that reemergence from Brock Purdy. If Mac Jones just keeps winning football games, Brock Purdy and a notoriously finicky undescribable injury, right? That's never fully healed until an off season.
Right,
he'll get
right.
as much runway as he needs because, hey man, we don't need you right now. But I'm very interested to see this week. I thought the Rams would be the team that sort of took advantage of the opportunities that Jones had given in the prior two starts. They were not. And I'm asking you again, this feels like a game where Tampa, and I've only gotten one preliminary watch on them. They could be that team. They're certainly feisty enough. I want to get into the simplified offense though. Like, how different is the offense when you watch them?
I don't know that it's fundamentally different, but I think there's a lot of, there are less deep shots built in, it feels mm-hmm. like. Feels like it's a lot of, and Mac hit a few. He hit a nice ball to Bourne on the sidelines. But it's like there's a lot of late releasing, check down options, either to Tonjes or to McCaffrey, that almost become the primary read.
Right.
And that's not really how he's reading out. He's looking, but like,
he's coming off it pretty fast.
There's a lot of like little snags, a lot of like short, you know, intermediate routes. And I just think the 49ers are taking less like actual shot plays. Now, they did take one to Robinson in the end zone that almost came off, where he did the stutter step, the sluggo and almost had it. And Mac just kind of missed him and he almost got his feet down. But I think in general, it's keeping the offense simpler. And I'm talking big picture, which is, I was watching Luke Kuechly talk about like how he watched film and
yeah, and I love
basically
that clip. Yeah.
Like, I want to know what a team's identity is. And like, when you watch the Niners with Mac, it feels like their identity is get the ball out quick, put it in somebody else's hands as quick as you can. And, you know, just keep it moving.
Where have we heard that before? Man, it's almost like he's wearing number 10. Fat Jimmy. Sorry, it's mean. But
why does Mac have like a kind of, how do I describe it? It's like he's got a swag that I can't really put my finger on.
He's a very confident young man.
Yeah, and it's like this very like earnestly plucky. I think the most incredible thing he's done is won 49ers fans over, because he did this thing where he was so incredibly hated and the prospect of him was so nauseating and there was such a disdain for Mac Jones. And the way his career is gone, it's sort of bottomed out. And now it's like he's like sort of the lovable underdog character where he's not the number 3 overall pick.
Right.
You know, and he was never really supposed to be, but he was for a second. That's how it was going to go. And now 100%. That he's like this lovable backup playing through injuries, sort of vomiting on the sidelines, wearing enormous suits from like Men's Big and Tall that are also custom tailored somehow.
Well, listen, when you got first round money, even at pick, 15?
Yeah.
I mean, I can buy a custom tailored suit. Not that I have much of a choice.
Agreed.
Until that tricepatide hits. But I don't know if I agree with the characterization, because if Mac had been drafted at 3, there would have been a general dry heaving on the sidelines from all the 49ers fan base. But if he went out and ripped it, everyone would be like, oh, Kyle knows best. Like, I don't know if that's what would have happened. You know,
It probably would have been okay, but I don't know. I don't know. I think, yeah, it's a great what if, but I don't think it would have elevated the team the way it needed to.
Yeah. By the way, I do take magnesium, Tony, every night. I just bought some more glycinate. I'm a glycinate man. Are you a citrate or a glycinate man? Makes sense. Go to Zach Wilson as a backup. I mean, the Shanahan shine is a real thing. They are running the Jimmy offense, and
I would disagree with that, because the Jimmy offense was like purely ripping it over the middle, pure play action, rip it over the middle every single time, and Max throwing outside the numbers. But in terms of like, yeah, in terms of like the sort of timing, like get the ball out of your hands, it feels like the evolution of that and attacking what defenses are giving you in a way that Jimmy didn't and was more obsessive. Now Mac is still throwing it over the middle sometimes into double and triple coverage.
Let's get into that. Is Kendrick Bourne and Mac Jones's chemistry a thing
Yeah, of course it is. They both had career years together in New England. Like, but, it is a thing.
Well, it's not a high bar for career years for either of those young men.
Fair.
I'll also throw out that, like, I'm going to say it's not a thing. I'm not saying that they don't like each other. I'm not saying that they don't have chemistry, but I don't think this is some sort of, like, bank on it every week thing. I'm going to say that this is a byproduct of the 49ers not having Ricky Pearsall, not having Juwan Jennings, and Kendrick Bourne being tasked with the job of being an X receiver in a classic Shanahan offense.
Yeah, but here's the thing is, like, I think even when, like, when Pearsall and Jennings are back, there's still, like, third down Kendrick Bourne energy that Mac's going to look for him while he's at quarterback, that he trusts him and has a feel for how Kendrick runs his routes, and he's still going to look to him at key moments.
Yeah, I think that we've seen the high and the low.
I don't disagree so that was the high.
That's fair. It's a pretty high bar to get over. Yeah. Kendrick Bourne, like, even if Kendrick Bourne has really good games from here on out, that's still going to be the high bar. But to the mindset of, like, he, especially in the second half, and you were keen on, you know, I think Herb Street pointed it out, or maybe it was our good friend of the show, Sam Schwartzman, on Prime. Prime Vision, ding! Where
stop, you have to stop with that. It's like, I feel like Dennis from
you just Pavlovian see negative
the, where it's always sunny and they're on the what's it called, Family Feud, and they have the buzzer sound. He's like, that sound.
That's what it is. But Mac was getting the ball out a lot faster.
Yeah,
in the second half. A lot of this is, you know, Mac is a really good processor. That is the fundamental thing that a Kyle Shanahan quarterback needs to be able to do. Brock, by the way, a very good processor. I'm not sure how to differentiate between the two of them there, but Brock takes shots. Brock can create plays. Maybe, as we've said before, they maybe need to pare it back a little bit for Brock, maybe a little bit more of the Mac offense for Brock. Yeah. And then you can build from there. Let's reestablish these foundations. Let's get back to basics. Kind of like they did with Seattle last year, Thursday Night Football, like under center, play action. Let's try it. And then we can go from there. But the processing aspect of it, he's able to read the field and stuff, but when you're throwing the ball fast, you don't have time to get to that third, fourth progression. He can, I know he can, but it was typically first read, and first read typically was the X receiver. And it was Kendrick Bourne, and he's like, yeah, I feel good throwing this. Wasn't that, it was Christian McCaffrey on a dump off.
Yeah, I also think there's an element of, like, maybe defenses treating Brock differently, accounting for him more. Because just when I watched Brock, like, it felt like he didn't have a lot of options to get rid of the ball. Like, there's some times where he would end up making a bad play, but, like, stuff wasn't there. And there were some times he was turning down things and... Again,
I'm curious to, I'll talk to a couple of linemen on Wednesday. I'm curious if the protection schemes are different with Brock and with Mac, knowing that Mac can't create with his feet, and how that operates, because clearly there's been more exotic blitzes. I think that's more of a byproduct of who they've played rather than Mac versus Brock in the backfield, but I'm wondering if the protection schemes are fundamentally different and how that then affects their ability to get to first and second read. Whereas, again, the beauty of Brock is that a lot of these plays, he's on his third or his fourth or his fifth read, right? Like, he has to get there because one and two aren't open. Credit to the receivers, credit to Kyle Shanahan. One and two have been open pretty much consistently. With Mac Jones as the quarterback. I can't put that on Mac Jones.
Yeah. There's a lot of, like, glance routes from Kendrick Bourne that just kept working against Quentin Lake, like, all game.
Cooked him. Okay, Niners are averaging 3.1 yards per carry. I was of the mindset that was the defenses that they played. The last 2 weeks, they've played defenses that are good. Jacksonville, great takeaway team, great linebackers. Defensive front, pretty tame, right? Always with a light box, four-man front. The Rams, pretty vanilla by Rams standards, and they're not exactly, you know, the Mike McDonald Seahawks. I'm starting to think this is a thing.
It is.
They just can't run the ball. Why can't they run the ball, Jake?
Why can't they run the ball? It's a great question, Dieter.
do Kyle's job for him right now.
Yeah, so there's a lot of reasons for it. One, every team's congesting the line of scrimmage and saying, we're not going to let them we're not going to let Christian McCaffrey get going. We're going to clog the line of scrimmage. So like at one point, the Rams just had three guys basically in two gaps where they're just like, we're going to make this really hard. We're going to attack, especially the interior of this line. Even if it's not technically like a stacked box, it basically is. Like, I think that stacked box stat is wrong.
I don't read it
because
that much.
I was watching it last week and I was like, there's eight guys in here a lot. Mm-hmm. So there's like all the linemen are pretty congested. There's not a lot of like nine techniques. There's a lot of guys like playing head up, four guys inside. Mm-hmm. And then so there's a few things where they're not able to pass off blocks well. They're asking a lot of interior linemen to climb and climb quickly. And when it's that congested, Brendel can't get up to his man quickly, or if it's someone else, it's usually Brendel. But Brendel's not that strong. He's good in the run game, but like no one's powerful enough right now. And so they're not getting an initial push to say, here's the other guy, I'm passing him to you, disengage. They're dog shit at passing blocks off to each other right now. Like really, they can't get off of it quick enough. Yep. And like Colby, like when he does it, it's either way too slow or way too fast. And there's not a lot of balance in between.
It's a pacing issue. I do think that's like the most underrated aspect of running the ball. And I think you're going to see that with the Buccaneers. So like Rashad White's going to be their number one back. And Rashad White was a dog shit running back for the first 4 years of his career. Just couldn't see it. Couldn't hit it. Couldn't do anything. Great pass catcher out of the backfield though. And like a legitimately like he's kind of a lanky back.
Right.
Like a really good receiver. I don't know what happened in Tampa, but for some reason he both sees it and can hit it this year. It's a pacing thing. He has a feel for it. There is a rhythm, almost a musical rhythm to, okay, these notes, then hit that note.
And right.
It's like jazz, right? It's a cosmic gumbo. No, but right now it does not feel like McCaffrey and the offensive line understand the speed that both are playing with. McCaffrey is just trying to get in there.
He's just trying to survive. He's looking for any hole to get through because nothing. And the amount of times where the backside that's supposed to be like a cutback lane, there's two guys unblocked. It's actually outrageous because there's that congestion in the middle. Mm-hmm. And then there's a lot asked of the wide receiver. And there's a lot where it's like you're supposed to get second level and then cut somebody off on the backside, which is like an almost impossible assignment for the interior guys.
Zones, yeah.
And then Farrell's like asking to reach, which he can't do. And he's getting bullied a lot. Tonjes, when he and Tonjes work together, it's like Tonjes is supposed to pass the guy off to Farrell. And Farrell's like, give him to me. And Tonjes is like, I can't do it. I'm trying my best.
I'm in the and wrong spot. He's too fast. I can't do this.
There is never, I'm not sure I've seen a play where every single player has done their job and has accounted for who they're supposed to account for because they just can't pass stuff off effectively right now. And there aren't that many lanes to run through, really.
Let me ask you this. Should they start running more gap stuff?
Maybe.
Kind of like what I was saying with, you know, Brock whenever he comes back, which might be, you know, 2029 at this juncture.
Yeah.
You know, let's simplify it. Let's do the basics. Let's run the Mac offense. And we'll build from there because you can build from there with a Brock Purdy. How about this? How about you just run duo a bunch until you've proven that you can run duo? And then you go from there. And let's get some straight up stuff. I don't know. Like, I'm not asking them to go crazy and start pulling guards or start doing trap blocks or anything, but how about just some head on a head? None of this pass off second level zone stuff, which I understand is fundamental to what it is they want to do. Like, I get it. That's the 49ers identity. And there are a lot of Kyle doesn't want to go away from that because even if it's an unsuccessful run play, having that look, because the offensive line blocks effectively the same way in the pass game. So now it brings in the linebackers. So there's all of that. But there are plenty of teams. The Packers run a ton of duo. The Rams, up until this game for some reason, ran a ton of duo. Like, everyone runs zone, and duo has been the kind of the buzzword of the offensive line community all season. Like, maybe you run a little bit more gap stuff so that it isn't as complex. It's just head on ahead and can you win, which they might not be able to do, but at least you'll find out.
Maybe, maybe. I mean, it's tough. It's tough for me to say, cause I'm just not sure anything's working. Cause the amount of time it's like the complexity or having a double team up front eases the pressure on some of these guys that aren't holding up. And when you try and go head on ahead or hat on a hat, like
they're still,
you don't have the guys, like that's not really working either. So you're just, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is because you don't really have the dudes. And I think you desperately need George Kittle back because you're blocking like, I don't know. I don't have a lot of kind words for it. They just can't get
it's
any
like,
push.
It's like Eric Saubert never left. That's what I look at when Farrell's out there. It is, you're right. They're plugging the middle, which by the way, coming this week again, here's Vita Vea lining up at nose guard.
Yeah.
And we're going to go. They played a lot of mint front, tight front against Seattle. And they're saying, okay, we're taking away the middle of the line. All right. And you
and
all have to
be fast too, man. They're so flying fast to the ball where it's like on the edge, like that one Sky Moore run where he couldn't like make a decision and then slow down. That was ugly. But like if you,
man, I wonder how they got him.
I know.
Yes. There's a lot of hesitation. There's a lot of unknown with the pacing. But they're consistently pushing the fulcrum of the run game outside. And when you're the Seattle Seahawks, like, okay, that's cool because you have Cooper Kupp. When you're the Los Angeles Rams, that's cool because you have Davante Adams and Puka Nacua. And when you're the San Francisco 49ers, you have Kendrick Bourne and Luke Farrell. So maybe that's it.
And it's working.
I mean, is it working? 3.1 yards per carry. It's
the
lowest.
And Bourne, by the way, still doesn't know what he's doing. That one play in the first half where he's like not lined up and then they like line up and then Jared versus like
next play. Yeah.
Jared versus like, what are you doing? And then
when the defense is telling you you're lined up wrong.
Right.
That's
also one of the worst missed false starts I've ever seen in the first half of this game by the refs. The Rams false started so egregiously. Maybe it was in the second half.
Full Chiefs.
But like, yeah, and it ended up being like a first down where it's like literally the entire offensive line false starts and they're like all standing there and it allowed a completion because D. Winters is like, what's happening?
Oh, man, yeah. Play to the whistle, D. Winters. Okay, Jordan Jefferson went to the Bengals. It flew under my radar, but they signed him. Is this a thing?
I don't think so.
I like Jordan Jefferson. Now, are you saying that Alfred Collins is enough? Because they're going to be down Yetur Gross-Matos.
When you got to clarify what you mean by is this a thing.
Is that going to look dumb?
But they'll always have their like explanation of like, oh, we couldn't do this. And
Dumb. I mean, people try to explain away dumb things.
Will it look a little dumb? I think probably. Probably.
Yeah. I feel like that's going to be a thing that we bring up again. Like, I feel like it's like, hey, remember when you had Jordan Jefferson? And no one's pretending as if he was anything more than a 10 snap a game player, but like he looked good for his 10 snaps. They couldn't find anybody to put on IR.
Well, yeah, it feels like it's Sebastian Valdez time.
Just saying.
Wow. Look at that.
There it is.
Right in sync. Thank you.
These are two mind folks meld who understand the pacing that is necessary. All right, let's go around the NFL.
Yeah.
Bengals traded for Joe Flacco. They're going for it, Jake.
I love it. At least from the perspective of you have two star wide receivers and like a pretty weak head coach in terms of like power dynamics.
Zach Robinson does not want to go back to selling insurance.
And from the perspective of Zach Taylor. Zach Robinson is, I believe, the OC for the Falcons.
And the future head coach of Oklahoma State.
Is that right?
Sure. Never wrong, just
How has Zach Taylor been in that job for that long?
Because he went to a Super Bowl.
No, I know the answer, but it's like crazy that he's been in that job for what, like 5 years, and no one has ever been like, Zach Taylor's a really good head coach.
No one has ever once thought that guy's a really good coach. No one's ever particularly noted that he's a terrible coach. We're not in the Brian Callahan
he's
zone.
He's just there. He's just there. He's got guys around him. I don't know. Maybe dig into that. Is anyone covering the Cincinnati Bengals?
Ben Baby at ESPN.
Ben Baby.
Ben Baby. He's the third rapper, Lil Baby, Da Baby.
Benny. Yeah, yeah. How do I feel about that? I think it's great. I think
it's hilarious.
Go for it. Let Joe Flacco sprinkle some non-existent magic and see what happens.
Do you think that they trade Trey Hendrickson? I'm not even talking about with the Niners. Do you think they trade him?
No, I think they probably tag him.
Yeah, I think that's right too. Okay, Trevor Lawrence. If you had to now say what is the definitive play of Trevor Lawrence's career, I'm going to go with last night when he stumbled twice, then ran into the end zone. Tony Romo could never. By the way, Tony Romo apparently
with Fred Warner on the call.
On the call, he just couldn't have done that against us. I don't get it with Trevor Lawrence. I'm kind of out. This dude just keeps getting away with it. I feel like this is going to end really poorly in Jacksonville. Liam Cohen clearly hates him.
It's so funny because like people are like, they just don't have a connection. They're just like slop festing their way into wins that everyone feels bad about. Feel bad wins.
Yeah. That's the kind of wins that we like to talk about.
I will say, maybe throw the ball to Travis Hunter a little bit more.
Wow. Imagine if that guy was allowed to just play wide receiver. I guess he had a good game at corner. It's not that hard against these Chiefs wide receivers, but I do not get the two-way thing. Again, kind of pick one. Pick one, dominate, and then if you need to sprinkle it in, sprinkle it in. Jonathan Gannon under fire in Arizona for doing what we would all have done in the moment and, I guess, touching DeMercado after DeMercado.
Yeah, he was showing him up on the sidelines. Very strange. Very strange.
What's going on with the Cardinals? What do you think is happening with the Arizona Cardinals right now?
What is happening with the Arizona Cardinals right now? Kyler, I don't know. Kyler's their quarterback, and they can't be taken seriously ever, regardless of like the cool pieces they have and like a decent defense.
You think Gannon's long for that gig, or is this the beginning of the end for him?
I don't know. He's got a little too much of a resemblance to Adam Gase.
Good pull.
There's a little, I mean, I think the problem with him is he does a little too much big timing with the media and that sort of stuff on the sidelines. And that stuff works when you feel like you've got like a tight operation. And when it's like,
when it's clearly the loosest operation based on the end of that game.
Yeah. It feels like there's an insecurity there.
Well, you take the bus home. Okay.
I just don't take them seriously, and that's just a pure vibes thing. Like I just don't trust any part of that team.
Yeah, there is something. You know, it's almost like they have like a black mold behind the drywall.
Right. Like, am I supposed to bet on Marvin Harrison? No.
There's something just fundamentally off going on there, and it's probably their quarterback. Get rid of the quarterback, and everything else might fall into place. Okay. I want you to rank these 3-2 teams, and I'm going to include the Packers, who have a tie. Seattle, the Rams, the Commanders, the Vikings, and the Packers. Rank these 3-2 teams.
Very quickly, I'm sorry. This is an incredible comment from Tony. Mitsubishi Marv is so good.
He's a Montero. That's very good. He's a Mitsubishi Montero.
That's strong. Okay, I'm going to rank them.
3-2
I'm going to say them. Number one, we're including the Packers in this. Is that right?
Yeah, they got the tie. I'm going to give it to them. I'm going to put them in the 3-2 category.
I will say Packers number one, Rams number two, barely Seattle over the Vikings number three. Ooh. Seattle, Vikings, Commanders last.
I think I would agree with you on the top three. I might put the Vikings below the Commanders.
I think that's fair.
I think very little of both of those operations right now. And I certainly trust the quarterback for Washington more. Washington's situation is wild. Their defense is a joke. And by the way, everyone who wants to talk about Trey Hendrickson and the trade, this and that, like, you want to know a team that's going to be going for a defensive end at the deadline? Washington Commanders. Rookie quarterback, rookie scale quarterback. They're out there trotting out Von Miller as if he can still give you something. It's a tough scene. So Yeah. 3-2 teams. I'm with you. I do think the Packers are probably the cream of the crop there. I'm not going to downgrade Seattle for what happened against the Buccaneers. That second half just went apeshit.
The Buccaneers are just chaos agents, right? Like anything can happen with them at any time. I don't like blame any team for like losing a late game to the Buccaneers.
That game was 6-0 going to the 2-minute warning in the first half. And then injuries just started piling up and Baker's out here swashbuckling. Never a better combination of player and team nickname than Baker Mayfield, Tampa Bay Buccaneer. He is a pirate quarterback. And it got just crazy in the second half. There was no semblance of logic to be found in the second half of that game. So something to keep an eye on. Okay. Let's do some chat room nonsense and get the hell up out of here. Yep. All right, Alberto R., the Seattle D might have also been overestimated. I mean, yeah, their backups are overestimated, and that's kind of who's playing right now. They're super injured at the moment, and but when they're healthy, they are the truth. That's an agreement from Jake.
I agree.
Okay, great. Gabe, on a serious note, how the hell did the Niners make the Super Bowl with Wilkes as a DC? Have you seen the Jets' defense lately? Wowzers. I mean, yeah, maybe don't let everyone in the world know that you play man-to-man on third down. Maybe that's kind of the important down to be multiple on.
They also, everyone on the Jets seems to just be like phoning it in. Like no one seems like they want to be there.
And they might, some of them might get their wish and leave here before the trade deadline. This Aaron Glenn situation, we're keeping an eye on it. That's something we're keeping an eye on. Okay. I don't agree with what Tony had here. Tony's a great commenter, but
yeah.
I think Mykel's going to have a favorable matchup against Tristan Wirfs. Tristan Wirfs was doing the business against Seattle. If you see, I think it was a Rashad White touchdown run. It was a touchdown run in the first half to the left side, under 2 minutes to play in the second quarter. Wirfs is out there going full Trent Williams on a jailbreak and just juggernauting dudes.
Yeah.
Wirfs is back.
I can't wait to see that matchup. I don't know how it will go. I expect it will be... I think it's going to be great for both sides. Like it's just going to be fun as hell to watch like Mykal Williams and Tristan Wirfs just go at it. I don't care how it goes. I just want to see it.
John shouts from Prague. You've been to Prague? Yeah.
I have been to Prague. Prague is an incredible city. Highly recommend it.
Great. Lee, need a larger sample size, but Brock keeps getting hurt and throwing picks. Then it's a conversation. I mean, Mac has thrown a couple picks and keeps getting hurt too. Just throwing that out there. Yeah. Griffin, maybe we can be quarterback by committee. It's an amazing thing to have in your tool bag. They used to run this thing called the A11 offense where it was two quarterbacks in the backfield. I'm pretty sure it's been banned in the lower levels of football.
They should do it
with one athletic, slightly athletic guy. And the other one is a completely non-athletic guy. They'll never know what hit him. All right, Tony again. If Kyle didn't trade up, we would have been fine with him at 12. Absolutely. When it comes to Mac Jones, love relitigating the 2021 draft. So much fun.
Again, the biggest mistake they made in that draft was just going, we're trading up to 3 because,
and we're going to get a done our
research, but we have to because we want to, and they're all good, even though we don't haven't decided if one of them is worth it, but we think one's at least okay. So we're going to make sure we get at least the mediocre one.
They pre-ordered a car. That's what they did. They're like, oh, this car hasn't been out yet or been on the road yet. Like, we'll just pre-order it and hope this all works out. And it turns out it didn't. Not at all. And now you're wishing that you had the Corolla at 25,000 miles on a reasonable rate, which is maybe what you have. Mac is what, 6'3"? Sorry, this is Strawberry. Mac is what, 6'3"? That 2 inches gives him 40% better vision. There is something to be said for Brock and being short and coming off of reads a little fast. At the same time, his running ability and his ability to create out of the pocket, I think totally nullifies that.
I mean, it definitely helps Mac. It definitely helps Mac, but it doesn't make him a better quarterback.
I mean, I don't think you need to go full like Dan McGuire and get a 6'9" quarterback back there. Like, there's not a lot of guys. I think 6'4" or 6'5"
is kind
of...
Brock Osweiler out of retirement.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Brock Osweiler, famous for having a typo tattoo. He had one of... Awesome. He made the It's failure. one of the big ones. Philly can't run the ball either. Benali. Yeah, Philly's offensive line is kind of down bad right now.
Everyone in Philly seems to hate every day. Everyone on that team is just like, ugh, can we just, like, they're good enough, like, they're good enough to, like, go to the Super Bowl again, and they all want to die. Like, I don't know how to explain it.
Well, it's expectations versus reality. And I think that, you know, listen, it's not like Baltimore's situation where you're like, what the hell is going on? But, like, and I think, you know, Chiefs fans kind of expected there to be some peculiarities this year, given just the run that they've been on and the kind of dilution of talent. But yep. The Eagles came into the season, and you and I were front of the pack on this one, not nationally or anything, but like we were both like, oh yeah, Eagles are far and away the best team in the NFC. And they are not. Yeah. They are still a very good team in the NFC, but they are just one of many right now. And I believe the Niners are technically above them in the standings as it stands.
I think they are.
So that doesn't matter because it's October, but it is expectations versus reality, the root of all good and all bad. And they expected to be so much better than this. They have an offensive coordinator who had never called plays, who can't seem to marry the run in the pass game. There's a weirdness to all of it. AJ Brown's out here subtweeting because that's what receivers do. Saquon Barkley ran for 2,000 yards last year. Can't run the ball in the offensive line, which they have just counted on as the foundation of their offense. Ain't there, and their defense is looking somewhat susceptible as well because they don't have a bona fide pass rusher for the outside. So I kind of get why they're angry. They were expecting so much more, and this team just looks like another team. And the fact that the 49ers with Mac Jones are in the same conversation as the Philadelphia Eagles, I'd be pissed too if I was an Eagles fan. Yeah. Also, they're naturally angry. I would do a lot
better
in that
market. I've been to Philly. I get it.
I like Philly,
but it's congested.
Yeah, they're all on top of each other for no good reason. It's like maybe you should have built a new town instead of the one that y'all built in like 1742.
No,
that cannot handle modern day infrastructures.
No, it can't.
And their subway sucks. It sucks so bad. All right, Jake, 57 minutes. Is that the tightest show we've ever done?
It's not bad. It's not bad. When are we going to talk again, Dieter?
Oh, Jake, when will we talk again? I long for the day. I think we're going to talk on Thursday.
Yeah.
And we're going to break down 49ers and Buccaneers. We'll offer a prediction as well.
It should be fun. It should be really fun.
This is the beauty of being you got away with one, right? The Niners, let's be clear. No one thought the Niners were winning that game. They got away with one. They are playing with some house money. It's not a lot, but they're playing with house money. They are up. Their stack is taller than they expected it to be. You can all just go into this game and appreciate the strangeness that's about to go down in Tampa Bay. It's going to be a weird one. I think it's going to be a fun one. I think
it might be better if they start off losing the game to Tampa.
We'll get into that on Thursday. That is a hell of a thought, And we'll talk to you all then. Looking forward to it immensely. Have a good one.
See you, folks.
Bye.